This is the voice of contract management presented by the law firm of Kroll & Mooring, exclusively for NCMA. Stay up to date on all things contract management 5 minutes at a time. Our team at Kroll & Mooring presents these podcasts to keep you up to speed on a bi-monthly basis. We will cover everything from regulatory updates to crucial changes that affect government contracting.
We are your co-hosts for this edition, Peter Ayer and Yuan Zhou. And Yuan's going to kick us off with an ASPCA decision that's of interest to contractors.
Thanks, Peter. So the ASPCA recently issued a decision granting a contractor's motion for partial summary judgment and denying the government's claim for unallowable costs to the extent that they were based on missing or unsigned employee time cards. So in doing so, the ASPCA held that the contractor was not required to maintain time card records to support the allowability of labor charges beyond the retention period specified in the contractor's cost plus fixed fee contracts, including applicable time extensions. Now, the contracts at issue incorporated both FAR 52215-2, audits and records negotiation, and FAR 52216-7, allowable cost and payment, which grant the government the right to examine the contractor's records reflecting all claimed costs and to reduce payments for the amounts that are unallowable. Now, following the contractor's delayed submission of two final indirect cost rate proposals, DCAA didn't begin auditing the proposals until 8 months after the contractual obligation to maintain records had expired. The DCAA then questioned the contractor's labor costs, for which there were no time card support, even though the contractor was able to demonstrate that it paid its employees. Now, the government's claim and the contractor's appeal followed. The ASPCA held that the contractor was not obligated to keep time card records beyond the FAR mandated retention periods that were set forth in the contracts. So the government couldn't disallow the costs on the basis that the time cards were unavailable. And in so holding, the ASPCA rejected the government's argument that applying the FAR criteria was unfair, noting that the records retention period is a product of government regulations and part of a FAR clause incorporated by the contracting officer. The ASPCA also denied the portion of the government's claim that relied on unsigned time cards, noting that the FAR's documentation requirements don't require signed time cards in order to support cost allowability. So a really helpful decision for contractors to be aware of. And Peter, back to you.
Great. Thanks so much, Yuan. Next up is an OIG report. In late September, DOD OIG released a report detailing the results of its audit of whether DOD contracting officials awarded cost reimbursement contracts in accordance with applicable regulations and guidance. DOD OIG concluded that many military service COs did not consistently comply with cost reimbursement contract requirements and potentially increased contracting risks when awarding such contracts without proper approvals, justifications, transition strategies, resources, and/or adequate accounting systems. DOD OIG examined a sample of 83 cost reimbursement contracts valued at about $27 billion and found that contracting officials consistently complied with cost reimbursement contract requirements when awarding only 38 of those 83 contracts. DOD OIG makes 13 different recommendations in the report, including that the Principal Director of Defense Pricing and Contracting clarify whether any exemptions exist regarding the applicability of current regulations for contracting officials to document in the contract file approval for the use of cost reimbursement contracts and transition strategies to include possibility for cost reimbursement contracts to transition to firm fixed price contracts. Another recommendation was to issue further guidance to emphasize the importance of coordination between contracting officials and ensuring that adequate government resources are available to award and manage cost reimbursement contracts before award. Now back to you, Yuan.
Thanks, Peter. On September 30th, President Biden signed the Small Business Innovation Research and Small Business Technology Transfer Extension Act of 2022, which reauthorizes SBIR, STTR, and six pilot programs for 3 years until September 30th of 2025. Now, the act includes new diligence and reporting requirements, award restrictions, and clawback provisions related to national security risks, particularly regarding firms with ties to China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran, and increased minimum performance standards for multiple SBIR and SDTR award winners. Now, the passage and signing of the act averted a potential lapse of these programs, which were set to expire the day of the reauthorization. Now, a few notable provisions. Sections 4 and 5 of the act require the head of each participating federal agency by June 27, 2023, to implement a diligence program that assesses security risks presented by small business concerns that are seeking any phase of SBIR or SDTR awards, unless the agency already has such a due diligence program in place. Now, specifically, the Act calls on agencies to scrutinize small businesses' cybersecurity practices, patents, employees, and foreign ties and obligations, and also requires awardees to report any material misstatement that the federal agency determines poses a risk to national security, as well as any change in ownership, change to entity structure, or any other substantial change in circumstances of that small business concern that the federal agency determines poses a risk to national security. Section 8 of the Act imposes increased minimum performance standards for experienced firms, effective April 1st, 2023, and this provision restricts SBIR contractors that are failing to meet certain performance standards, which limits their ability to continue racking up additional SBIR awards and funding. And finally, Section 9 of the Act requires awarding agencies to implement a multi-level review and approval process for solicitation topics to essentially ensure adequate competition and ensure that no private individual or entity is shaping the requirements for eligibility for the solicitation topic after selection of the solicitation topic. Peter, back to you.
Great. Last quick update relates to the contractor COVID vaccine mandate. There was further guidance yesterday that was released by OMB and direction to contracting officers that pending any type of further guidance, that contracting officers should not attempt to enforce those obligations, nor should contracting officers attempt to include that clause into contracts. So obviously, we're going to continue watching both the regulatory side and the legal litigation side, but an important development for contractors, for sure.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening to the Voice of Contract Management, brought to you by Kroll & Mooring exclusively for NCMA. Stay tuned for our next episode as we continue to discuss all things government contracting. In the meantime, explore your learning opportunities at www.ncmahq.org/coursecatalog.